gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, P.J. Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Rich.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
Rockets come out of the All-Star break with a resounding win over the Golden State Warriors, 135-105. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. You can also find our show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And if you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a favor. Subscribe to us on all the podcast listening platforms. Write a review if you've got the time. Maybe leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. So as I mentioned already, the Rockets basically bludgeoned the hell out of the Golden State Warriors 135-105. And look, I'm just going to get this out there right away, right? Obviously, this is not the Golden State Warriors of old. It's not. There's no Steph. There's no KD. There's no Klay. But it still feels great to beat the Warriors. I don't care. That rivalry will be there forever, at least for me. And so I don't care if it's the G League Warriors or the Santa Cruz Warriors or whatever you want to call them. I don't care. I like it when the Rockets beat the Warriors, and especially given the disappointment that was the Christmas Day game on national television against the Warriors the last time these two teams met up, it's pretty nice that they got this win. And in this win, we got to see the new-look Rockets. We got to see Jeff Green, who had a pretty strong game overall. We got to see Damari Carroll, who, quiet game, didn't make a lot of noise, played some great defense, played some very, above-average defense, who, Damari Carroll signing his contract literally, like, as he was being ushered out onto the court for warm-ups, basically. But great game all around. The starters, every single player for the Rockets played well. Honestly, I don't have a lot of gripes about this one, other than there were a few stretches in this one. Kind of, you think back to the second quarter in this game, and then maybe that start of the second half where they were kind of letting up on the gas just a little bit. You know, the Warriors were scoring pretty easily. They went on some runs of their own, but the Warriors' largest lead in this game was 1 point. And I can't even remember where that happened because, regrettably, I was unable to catch the first, 2 minutes of the game. So if that would happen there, then that happened there. But this was a game that, obviously, the Rockets are supposed to win. The Warriors are struggling. They're 12-44 now on the season, just 7-20 at home after losing this one to the Rockets. So this is a game you're supposed to win. This is one of those teams you're supposed to beat. But it's great that we saw them beat them in a commanding sense, and they did so while being able to kind of experiment with Jeff Green, getting Damari Carroll some burn, reducing the minutes across the board on all their starters. No player for the Rockets played more than 30 minutes, and the only guys who hit 30 minutes were Harden, Westbrook, and PJ Tucker. So that's huge. You come back out of the All-Star break, yeah, there's always the old adage, rest versus rust and all that, and we saw that earlier this season after the weird, 8 days off that they had after or before playing the Philadelphia 76ers, I should say. And so maybe Mike D'Antoni was just like, yeah, I'll get these guys to 30 and then pull them. Regrettably, because of the decision to keep Russell Westbrook in the game at the top of the fourth quarter, Westbrook was ejected. So Westbrook picks up a technical foul early in the game for complaining about a no call because, let's face it, he's a fiery dude. When he thinks he deserves a foul call, he's going to turn, say something to the refs, whatever. But all he said to the ref was, I think lip reading it was like, oh, come on, or something like that. Just nothing major, definitely didn't really warrant a technical, but he got one. And then in the fourth quarter, as tensions were rising, the G League Warriors were getting a little frustrated with being down, about a million points. And temper started to flare. Westbrook threw an unintentional blow at one of the Warriors, and then, you know, everybody gets all together. Everybody's riled up. Damari Carroll, brand new Rocket Damari Carroll, was the one pulling Westbrook out of the scrum. So, you know, veteran move right there by Carroll, you know, trying to get Westbrook away from the action and kind of calm him down. But Westbrook was assessed a technical, so he is now up to 13 technicals on the season. So for those unfamiliar with how that works, when you are assessed your 16th technical, you are automatically suspended for one game. And then I believe it's every two technicals thereafter that you are suspended for an additional game. So Westbrook is one of those guys, you know, with his temper, with his emotions, he does rack up a fair bit of technicals. That being said, the Rockets still have a couple more back-to-backs this season, and they could very easily, intentionally have Westbrook pick up a couple technicals and time them with one of the remaining back-to-backs on the schedule. That's probably the best way to handle this situation. Because if you know you're already going to be missing Westbrook for a game, why not, you know, maybe it's not devil's advocate really, but, you know, just maybe egg him along a little bit, you know, as you're approaching the next back-to-back, which I believe is March 8th. So 7th and 8th, I think, is the scheduled back-to-back. Let's see, we got schedule over here. I didn't scroll down. Oops. Yeah, March 7th and 8th. So off the top of my head. So Saturday, March 7th, they play at Charlotte. And then Sunday, March 8th, they play in Houston against the Orlando Magic. So it's very possible you could make the argument that between right now, which is February 21st, and the 7th and 8th set of back-to-backs, you just have him pick up two more technicals, and then maybe in that Charlotte game, the first night of the back-to-back, you have him pick up his 16th technical, and then he sits out at home against the Magic. So that would be kind of a smart way to handle it, or in my opinion, because I still I'm a firm believer that Westbrook should play the second night of a back-to-back. I'm just saying he could pick up a technical against the LA Clippers Thursday, March 5th, or whatever. Just be at 15 technicals and figure it out on the back-to-back. It's not that hard. 4D chess, more you'll figure it out. Past that, again, everybody in this game had a phenomenal game. You look at James Harden's stat line, 29 points, 3 rebounds, kind of low in the rebounding department, but, you know, the team as a whole didn't get out-rebounded by a whole lot. 41 rebounds as a team for the Golden State Warriors to just 36 for the Rockets. So they were only out-rebounded by 5. Not a huge margin there. The offensive rebounds a bit more concerning. Golden State had 14 of those to the Rockets, just 8. But back to James Harden. 29 points, 3 boards, 10 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, only 1 turnover on the evening. Westbrook and Harden, well, I say it now, I didn't revisit the stat. I was going to commend Westbrook and Harden for both of their assist to turnover ratios, but at one point Westbrook hit his 10th assist, I want to say, and still only had 1 turnover, and then over the course of the game he committed 3 more turnovers and didn't pick up another dime. So Westbrook finished 21 points, 5 rebounds, 10 assists, a steal, and 4 turnovers to James Harden's 1 turnover. So collectively, that's 20 assists between the two of them and only 5 turnovers. I'll take that every game between those two guys. That's an amazing assist-to-turnover ratio for those two guys. I've said it all season long. I'm content if James and Russ combined keep their turnovers below like the 7-8 mark combined. I am ecstatic because that means they're really taking care of the basketball, especially with just how much usage those guys get. If they can keep those turnovers down, it's great overall for the team. Now, from, I guess, a different turnover stat standpoint, I will say, the Rockets forced a lot of turnovers. Golden State turned the ball over 23 times, and the Rockets scored 31 points off those turnovers. And as a team, the Rockets only turned the ball over 16 times. That's huge. And I wasn't able to pull up the stat because, unfortunately, tonight's stats aren't loading just yet across all the different, you know, platforms and whatnot. But the Rockets are leading the league in all their small ball games as far as leading the league in fewest turnovers committed and most turnovers forced. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I remember seeing the stat floating around on the timeline. So that's huge. Small ball is chaotic. Yes, you're going to lose the battle on the rebounds occasionally, but if you're forcing other teams to turn the ball over and then subsequently scoring on that because your offense is more potent now than it's ever been with Westbrook operating in space, with all the three-point shooters, and I kind of buried this, the Rockets drilled 24 five three-pointers in this game on a blistering 51% from behind the arc. They were just too shy of breaking or of tying their own record that they set last season against the Phoenix Suns. They couldn't miss. PJ Tucker, 5 of 5. Robert Covington, 5 of 10. Daniel House Jr., 3 of 4. Russell Westbrook got in on the action and was shooting 50% from behind the arc on a whopping 2 attempts, 1 of 2. James Harden was really the only, James Harden and Seth Losha, I guess, were really the only two that like significantly struggled. James Harden, 3 of 12 from behind the arc. Jeff Green, 4 of 5 from behind the arc. That's not going to happen all the time. Don't get used to it. Tabo Sefolosha, 0 of 2. Bruno tried a 3, missed it, 0 of 1. Rivers, 1 of 3. McLemore, 3 of 4. And then Frazier, 0 of 1. The team played phenomenally well. There's very little to be upset about in this one. But moving into the next segment, I'm going to run the James Harden post-game audio, just kind of get some of his thoughts, as well as visiting a couple points from this one that I want to talk about as far as some of the lineups that we saw Mike D'Antoni testing, as well as some of the plays that we are already familiar with in this Rockets offense, but kind of some new wrinkles that are now being included in them. So we'll hit this break really quick and be right back. And back in here for our second segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Rockets' 135-105 win against the Golden State Warriors, improving the team to 35-20 on the season, now 16-12 on the road. They are riding the mountainous high of a two-game win streak. And so I mentioned at the end of last segment, I'll get to the James Harden audio here in just a moment, but the first thing that I want to talk about, first point that I want to make, is that the one lineup that I saw out there tonight that I was just immediately turned off from, did not want to see it again, is I really don't want to see basically Russ, Tabo Sefolosha, and Jeff Green in the game at the same time. I feel like those guys are going to be your set of essentially the worst shooters. Now, I say that, right, and Jeff Green shot 4 or 5 from behind the arc, so maybe Jeff Green's sitting somewhere saying, shut up, Jackson. Anyways, no, look, I don't think Jeff Green's going to reliably shoot 80% from behind the arc, in however long his Rockets career is. I think this game was a great example of what he can do. He can space the floor, and we'll get into some of the play calls, the through-hold play that the Rockets love to run, and, the wrinkle now involving Jeff Green with that play specifically. But as far as that lineup that I just mentioned, those three guys on the court, I've harped on it all season about one of the issues with this Rockets offense at times is hesitancy in shooters. You cannot hesitate to shoot in this lineup. You have to pull the trigger the moment you are open. That's how this offense is built. It's not built on three-point shooting quality. It's built on volume of three-point shots. The Rockets shoot more threes than anybody else in the league, and they have doubled down on that math by going small ball and wanting to shoot more threes now. And they do it with not necessarily phenomenal three-point shooters. They just rely on the volume of them. So if you're not getting three-point shots up, you're not doing Rockets basketball right. That being said, Tabo Sefolosha is a bit of a hesitant shooter. He's got that slow release. Having him in there along with Jeff Green, who, again, was 4 or 5 in this one, so I'm giving him credit, but I don't expect him to be a marksman for the rest of his Rockets tenure. And then Russell Westbrook, obviously, he's not a shooter. So when you have those three guys in there, I feel like it does screw up the spacing just a little bit. And it was pretty evident in this one that lineup specifically wasn't that great. And Mike D'Antoni, ended that experiment pretty quickly. But overall, Jeff Green, I'm very pleased with. In fact, before I start, ranting and raving about Jeff Green's game, his first game as a Houston Rocket, or as a member of what are we going to call him? The Astro Thunder, I think, is a pretty good nickname for what Jeff Green, Tabo Sefolosha, James Harden, Russell Westbrook. Are we going to call him Astro Thunder? You guys let me know. Do we like Astro Thunder? We can do that. Anyways, so we'll hear from James Harden really quickly, and then I'll dive into the rest of the points that I want to make in this segment.
Pretty good. Oh, sorry. There's a lot of opportunities, especially with our guards driving and put pressure on the paint. If you don't come over to help, we got layups and dunks. And if you do come over, we got an open shot opportunity. So we got some really good ball movement, and that's what's going to take.
Were you guys aware how close you were to the three-point record?
Nah. We were just trying to play the right way.
Dude, you think some of the texts that Russ picks up are based on reputation or things from his past?
I don't know. I think today he got a tech. You know, he felt like he got fouled. I think he got fouled, and you know, so he showed his anger. You know, and as any player, if they felt like they got fouled numerous of times and it wasn't being called, they express their emotion. So, I mean, everybody knows how he played and his emotion, and you know, he did what he had to do.
When you have a teammate that's close to that 16 tech threshold for suspension, do you say anything to him, or do you just let it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't know. How many is he at?
13.
How many is it? I don't really get texts. I don't really know.
You get 16 for the
year. All right. You got 3 more to go.
How much are you enjoying playing with Russell Westbrook? I mean, you guys obviously knew each other. You played before with
him. Yeah, I mean, it's great, obviously, with Russ. But our entire team, like, we're on a mission. And, you know, we're going to take it game by game. But I think we're all excited to play hard for when we win another.
Jeff Green didn't play since, well, I don't know when he played, but he was kind of on Christmas Eve. To come in 2 months later, and
true professional. True professional, always always ready. You know, it's just the name was called and he was ready to go. He made some, you know, obviously shots, but just defensively, he just fit well with what we're doing.
I figured the least that I could do was let James kind of, you know, share his happy thoughts about Jeff Green's play before I started raving about him. But seriously, Jeff Green played well in this game. He was not detrimental on defense. He used his size to his advantage, I should say. And the one element that I think he brings that is, I'm not going to say sorely missed, but it's an element, it's a layer to the Rockets offense that I think is crucial at times to have. It's the vertical spacing. It's the vertical spacing that was so critical that Clint Capella provided for years. It was what made the deadly pick and roll between Clint Capella and James Harden so lethal. It's back. Jeff Green can provide you that. We saw it, twice in this one? At least one attempt from James Harden where Jeff Green did take a bit of a nasty spill as he got undercut going up for the lob. And then we saw a successful one on a back screen, which is a similar action to what they used to run with Clint Capella, where Westbrook was just waiting for the action to develop. And then off of just a simple back screen, Jeff Green rolls straight to the rim and has a wide open alley-oop dunk. So having that level of vertical spacing in the offense from what is essentially your backup five in Jeff Green is amazing because it allows them to, you know, maybe if whoever they're playing is closing out on shooters too well, or, you know, the trapping is working, you know, working magically on James Harden for whatever reason and shooters just don't have it that night, it allows them to kind of fall back into their traditional high pick and roll. Let's get James Harden or Russell Westbrook going downhill, get some separation from whoever's guarding them, and just see if we can't work the ball in that way. And then in addition to that, I do think Jeff Green's ability to take people off the dribble, his ability to drive, is a bit underrated. I think that's a huge place that he can be beneficial in this Rockets offense because, let's face it, there aren't too many guys that like to go off the dribble in this Rockets system. There's just not. Like, I don't, every time PJ or even Covington to a lesser extent, Tabo, Ben McLemore, like whenever those guys start dribbling the basketball, I immediately start like having heart palpitations because I'm just like, it's going to be a turnover or like a mid-range floater or some awkward looking layup, you know, attempt towards the basket. You know, those guys, they have their niche roles on the offense, and I think this team functions a little bit better when they stick to what they're good at. Jeff Green, though, he's a guy who, you know, he is a slasher. He's a guy that can go to the rim, finish well, and if he's going to shoot this way, then defenses are going to have to respect him and close out on him, which means they're not going to be able to load up the paint. So the Rockets still get to play their five-out offense, but they have kind of this multi-skilled scorer in Jeff Green who can be a big benefit to this team. Now, Damari Carroll was not as impressive in this one as Jeff Green. To be fair, Damari Carroll did not get to participate in a practice. He literally showed up, just laced him up, and then got thrown out there. And yes, it's not that hard exactly to fit into the Rockets' scheme, at least offensively. It's, you know, set a few picks occasionally and go stand on the three-point line. Maybe set a few back picks, whatever. Not that difficult to grasp. But still, he didn't have the benefit of a practice with Jeff Green, that Jeff Green did have with the Rockets. So I'm still pretty high on Damari Carroll. I did like what he was providing defensively. Obviously, he was almost a big nothing on offense, just hit a pair of free throws and that's it, but secured three rebounds. He had four assists, so he was, you know, passing the ball well as far as, you know, just making sure it got to the open shooter. That's all they had to do in this game. Every time they went to go trap James Harden, and it meant that Russell Westbrook was going to attack a broken defense, or they were going to rotate the ball around the three-point arc till it got to the open shooter, that's all you have to do. They played beautiful basketball in this one. And I know it's the Golden State Warriors. They are not a good team this year, but it's still inspiring to see how good this version of the Rockets can be, even on a night where, all things considered, James Harden kind of struggled. Yeah, he shot 3 of 12 from behind the arc, 6 of 16 overall, lived at the charity stripe, 14 of 15 free throws for James Harden at the charity stripe. So I'm sure Golden State Warriors fans will be all kinds of salty about that number, but we'll have the final segment here in just 1 second, kind of wrapping up some thoughts on this one, as well as, you know, some brief thoughts about the upcoming Utah Jazz game and the ramifications of that one in the grand scheme of things. So we'll hit this break and be right back. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, discussing the Rockets' 135-105 win against the Golden State Warriors. So I mentioned it briefly earlier in the pod. I do want to talk about some of the, I guess, the new wrinkles that they have, and they do involve Jeff Green, but they don't necessarily have to be Jeff Green specifically. Any other player can do it. So the main takeaway that I have from this, as it was pointed out by Ali Kambijani of The Athletic on Twitter, that through hold play that we have come to know and love as part of the Houston Rockets offense, it's the play where Eric Gordon or Ben McLemore at times this year, and in previous years, Gerald Green, they kind of do this little like circular motion in the paint, and then they can either flash towards the basket, depending on where their defender is, or they can flash out to the three-point line. And there's a big, it used to be Clint Capella, who would set kind of, you know, a quick little screen to allow for that to happen. In this game specifically, the play that Ali Kambijani used to highlight this, Jeff Green set the pick in the paint, and then there was nothing there for Ben McLemore, so Ben McLemore circles back around, and then Jeff Green is actually the guy who pops out to the three-point line, and I want to say that was how he drilled his very first three-pointer in the game. I could be wrong on that aspect of it, but I remember the play being that specifically. So that action is really interesting because they never could do, I mean, they could do that before, yes, when they're running their bench unit, but when Clint Capella ran that play, his only option was to, you know, go back to the dunker spot and that's it. So now they have, you know, these extra layers within the offense to be able to have, you know, their other players, other shooters, Tucker, Green, whoever it may be, to, you know, fill that void, to take that spot in that specific play, I should say. And it just opens up so many more doors. Now, I've been ranting and raving about how amazing Jeff Green was for a chunk of this podcast. Another guy that needs some recognition, Robert Covington, who has been nothing short of phenomenal in his time with the Houston Rockets, his short time with the Rockets, just 5 games, obviously not an amazing sample size, but in those 5 games, Robert Covington is averaging almost 14 points a game, 13.8 points per game. He is shooting about 38% from behind the arc. He's averaging 6 rebounds, almost 2 assists, only 1 turnover a game, steal and a half a game, and then the category that I am in love with, he's averaging 2.2 blocks per game. He had 4 blocks against the Celtics, and he had 4 blocks in this one against the Warriors. His length is so critical to this Rockets small ball scheme, because the Rockets, for all intents and purposes, yes, you go look at the heights on the team, 6'5". 6'3", 6'3", 6'6", 6'6", 6'7". Jeff Green is the tallest dude who's going to be getting playing time, him and Bruno at 6'9". So length is important, and Robert Covington brings that with his 7'2" wingspan. He brings length and defensive IQ. watching him on switches, watching him recover on drives, watching him play the game, Robert Covington just gets defense. And I feel like it's been far too long since the Rockets have had multiple players who get defense on their team. Like, just inherently good defensive-minded players. I'm going to throw Damari Carroll into that category. Austin Rivers, PJ Tucker. But something that made that 17-18 team so special is you had a nice little set of those guys, guys who pride themselves on good defense. And it feels like the Rockets have a nice little subset of those guys going into the back half of the season this year. Again, you've got PJ Tucker, Austin Rivers, Daniel House, maybe not a great defender at times, but knows how to use his athleticism to his benefit. But I'm just so impressed by Robert Covington. I really appreciate what he brings to this team. And the sample size continues to grow, but that lineup, the new Rockets starting lineup, and it remains to be seen whether or not Eric Gordon didn't even play in this game. They were this dominant without having Eric Gordon, who is arguably at times their third best player. Didn't even have him, but the Rockets lineup of Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Daniel House Jr., Covington, and Tucker, which we've mentioned this lineup before as far as their net rating, continues to impress. So after the Golden State Warriors game, the lineup's rating now an offensive rating of 121.2, defensive rating of 99.1, and a net rating of 22.1. So that lineup continues to impress. And the eye test matches, when those guys are on the court, the Rockets look like a really good team. I cannot get past how fluid the offense looks, running everything through Westbrook and Harden in open floor space. I feel like so many of the questions immediately after the trade of Clint Capella were centered around the fact of, oh, how are they going to guard opposing bigs? You know, what are they going to do with Jokic? What are they going to do with Gobert? It doesn't matter. How are those guys going to guard this version of the Rockets team? Again, they are 3-2 now in the official small ball era since dealing Clint Capella, and very well could be 4-1 with the one loss coming as a scheduled loss against the Phoenix Suns without Russell Westbrook and missing Eric Gordon for a chunk of that game as well. In a game where just the energy didn't feel great, it was the second night of a back-to-back, you just had a really big win against the Lakers. I could go on and on and on about it. So I feel really confident in this version of this Rockets basketball team, and I think this is the best version of the team we've seen since the 17-18 squad. I think this team blows last year's team out of the water. I think if you were to pit them both against each other, even as good as James Harden was last year with the unguardable tour and all that, I think this version of this team is better. And I don't think I'm alone in thinking that. I think a lot of you guys probably feel the same way. I think there were some people that were concerned about the trade on the surface, and I think now the Rockets will continue to prove the doubters wrong that small ball can work. And speaking of small ball working, it's got to work against the Utah Jazz. So this game, this upcoming game, the very next game against the Utah Jazz, which will be Saturday evening in Utah, so in Salt Lake City, is a huge game for the standings. Because as it sits right now, the Utah Jazz are 36-18. They hold down the fourth spot in the Western Conference. They are a game and a half ahead of the Rockets. Rockets are 35-20, so they're two games back in the loss column. This game gives you the tiebreaker over the Jazz because they only play each other three times this year. So you need that if you want the tiebreaker. And on top of that, you don't leapfrog them directly in the standings, but you would then be just a half game back of the Jazz, which is huge. You need this win against the Jazz. If you want to make it into possibly, the three, maybe even the two seed territory, you've got to pick up this win against the Utah Jazz. And given that this team played the Jazz really well in their last matchup, I'm going to firmly say I think they're going to secure this W. I think it's going to take a really bad game by one of James Harden or Russell Westbrook for them to struggle in this one. And I mean, or if the, I mean, obviously a lot of things can go wrong, right? The role players can forget how to shoot the basketball. They can come out with whack energy and, you know, all sorts of things can go wrong. But I feel like they are dialed in. I've shared the numbers on social media as well as talking about it in the last podcast with Adam Clanton. They perform better in the second half of the season. Whatever it is, whether it's a mental roadblock, they get past the All-Star break and they know it's time to, you know, for lack of a better term, it's time to nut up. They get to the second half of the season and they know it's time to turn it on, to play hard, to give every game 110% energy down the line. And I expect that. You know, we saw it against the Warriors. They came out guns blazing against the Warriors. A 37-18 first quarter. They did not want to come out and have a lackluster game and get embarrassed on national media or on a national broadcast again. They didn't want that to happen. And I feel like they're going to take this momentum, this energy into the Utah Jazz game. And I would love to see them blow out the Jazz. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. It'll probably be a close game. But it'd be great to just waltz into Salt Lake and just like drop a doozy on them. Like I'm talking 20 plus point victory or something, to the point that Quinn Snyder pulls all of his starters at like the 6 minute mark of the fourth quarter. That'd be really nice. I would be ecstatic if the win looked something like that. I don't think it will, but I would be ecstatic if it did. So I want to revisit really quick. Let me see if there's any points that I'm missing looking at tonight's. Just go back to the box score. Who we got on here? Again, talked about Green, Carroll, Cephalosha, you know, kind of an off game from him. Three steals for Thabo Cephalosha. You know, he's still active defensively. And Mike D'Antoni is going to have time to figure out his lineups and to figure out who he wants where. And this was something I commented on Twitter as well, is, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to boil down to, oh, these are going to be the eight guys come playoff time, right? It doesn't have to be that. The Rockets clearly have their top six, which is, you know, whatever iteration of the starting lineup you want between Daniel House and Eric Gordon, and then whichever one is the, you know, sixth man, that's your top six. Austin Rivers is probably your seventh best guy. And then they have this kind of hodgepodge assortment of all the other guys. Ben McLemore, Thabo Cephalosha, Jeff Green, and Damari Carroll now. Bruno may be getting some minutes. Who knows? They've got a bunch of guys to choose from. So D'Antoni's going to get to play with rotations a little bit during the back half of the season. And ideally, what I'd like for him to do is just roll with the hot hand. It could be Damari Carroll one game that gets, you know, a majority of the bench minutes because, you know, his veteran wing defense is, you know, the opposing team necessitates that versus the offense that you get from Ben McLemore, or maybe the size of Jeff Green and Bruno is more important than having, you know, the spacing and the shooting of Ben McLemore, whatever it may be. You have options now. And that's why it's so great that they were able to secure not one, but two buyout market guys in Carroll and Green. So after this first game, and as long as he doesn't suck for the next four games, I'm pretty firm in that Jeff Green will probably sign for the remainder of the season. I think this was almost in one game, I think we saw exactly how good it can be. Now, will it be this way every single game? Absolutely not. Jeff Green's not going to suddenly average 15 to 20 points a game off the bench and become the Rockets' sixth man of the year. That's not how this works. That he had a good game, absolutely. But we've seen this before from Jeff Green, where he has that one-off good game and then he disappears for a few games. It's very Josh Smith-esque, which I compared him to that already. So I'm excited about the possibilities. I'm glad they picked up this win. It's a great first win out of the All-Star break, and they need to build on it with a win against the Utah Jazz to better position themselves in the standings moving forward. I think that's where I'll wrap things up for today. As always, thank you all so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back here again very, very soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.